It's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levenier. Stay with us for this hour of romance. Later on, we hear Olivia de Havilland reprise her screen role from Hold Back the Dawn on the Academy Award Theater. Next, it's the series Romance, produced by CBS, with an episode called Dateline Escobar. This from August 13th, 1955.
He was 3,000 miles away from me when this began. He was in another world. I was boarding an airplane for a country I'd never seen, and one that I'd never want to return to again.
Now, from Hollywood, Romance. Romance. Stories of love and adventure, of excitement and derring-do. Today, South America. Intrigue and revolution between two warring factions. And now with Gene Bates as Shelley Reynolds, we bring you transcribed Weldon Fane's unusual adventure, Dateline Escobar.
You will like our country, senorita. Lovely mountains tipped with snow, green valleys fresh with the smell of new earth. Ours is a land of the future. We are still undeveloped, still struggling from the poverty of the old days.
I've read a great deal about Escobar, Senor Sanchez. I couldn't tackle this kind of assignment unless I had.
Yes, of course. Forgive me.
Oh, I didn't mean to seem rude. I'd like to see your country through my own eyes, to write my impressions as they occur to me. It's really no different from any other correspondent approaching a new subject.
Yes, I understand, Senorita Reynolds. Your magazine has certain requirements.
Tell me about President Payoto.
What do you want to hear? That he is a modern Bolivar? That he is a savior in South America?
If you think that.
He is my president. He is the leader of my party. Would you have me think less?
Didn't they bury the last man who ran against him?
It was not Juan Payoto who killed him. Payoto was grieved by the incident. He is a great man, sometimes misunderstood. I hope you will see.
I promise you, Senor Sanchez, I will see only what is there. My magazine had given me the assignment to do a piece on President Payoto and the Republic of Escobar. There had been more than the usual rumblings of revolution in this South American country, and my editor felt we should be there for the real outbreak when and if it should start. Coincidentally, on the plane, I'd found myself sitting next to one of Payoto's top advisors. And of course, it was no coincidence at all. We landed just after dark at the Airport Nacional, and I wasn't too surprised when Senor Sanchez invited me to come with him to Payoto's summer palace. We drove for an hour over a twisting gravel road that climbed steadily. Finally, the car stopped before an imposing mansion, and I was escorted up marble steps through the huge doors, then down a tile corridor into a tremendous room.
Senorita Reynolds, well, well, welcome, welcome.
From across the room, he came toward me, short, fat, bald, smiling, wearing a gold lamé dressing gown and gold embroidered slippers. The Honorable President Juan Payoto.
Well, 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 Senorita Reynolds. Sanchez telephoned me from the airport. So good of you to accept our invitation.
Well, it was very kind of you to ask me. Yeah.
Pedro! Pedro!
Dear President!
The food! The food! Where is the food?
Forgive the service, senorita. You need something to eat. Americans like a midnight snack before retiring, eh? Mm. You will stay as my guest.
I'd consider it an honor.
Don't mention it. Don't mention it. You know, of course, I was educated in the United States.
Columbia, class of 27.
Oh. I like that. I like that. Thorough. Tell me, did you like what you read?
I haven't decided yet.
Wonderful! You haven't decided yet. Wonderful!
Pedro, the food! The food, you idiot!
To be invited to remain at Pioto's palace as his personal guest was an opportunity I couldn't pass up. I was given a suite in a separate wing of the building. There were two servants to chauffeur me around the countryside. But the excursions were generally depressing. Poverty, illiteracy, disease were commonplace. There were signs of the struggle to bring civilization into this raw land, but they were too few. One evening, after a magnificent feast, Pioto and I discussed it.
It is true. I have food while some are starving, but is this not true in your country?
Well, not to the fantastic extremes I see here. Your people are destitute. Your country's bankrupt.
Why do you imagine I want a loan from the United States? I want to build roads that people can travel on and schools. There must be more schools.
And what are you going to teach in the schools?
Democracy, like the United States. I admire your country, senorita.
That statement is for publication, of course.
Oh, of course. I admit it. I invited you to stay here for that very purpose. I want the American people to know the truth. And you will write the truth in your magazine.
The truth as I see it.
So, you are free, are you not? Have I tried to restrain you, to influence your articles? You have a car to go as you please. This is no Iron Curtain here.
Where does your palace fit in a democracy?
Someday it will be as the White House is to your country.
What about right now?
When the people are educated, only then. Now they are like children.
That's an old argument, the paternal ruler.
You do not understand my people. There are many needs I must fulfill.
Like guns?
Then you know of the resistance.
I didn't come to look at just one side of it.
It will not last. I will crush it.
With U.S. money, the money you hope my articles will help you get.
You do not believe me, do you, senorita?
Perhaps. I'm not sure. Your ideas are interesting, but your methods are questionable.
Then you may leave. You need not insult my hospitality.
You can't stand criticism, can you? Seems to me it's a common failing among dictators.
I am no dictator! Now get out of here. Get out.
I watched him as he hurried out of the dining room. Later, I browsed through the books in Pioto's library. About midnight, I took a walk out in the warm night air. A full moon sent brilliant light over the rose garden. It was as I was returning to the palace that suddenly a man stood in my path.
Senorita Reynolds?
Huh? Who are you?
My name is Ocho. You must come with me at once.
Why?
It is your life. Juan Pioto is angry, and when this happens, one learns to move quickly.
You are with the resistance?
Ah, si. Lieutenant Ocho.
And we're going to your camp?
Si, senorita, please, have patience. We will explain in due time.
We drove for an hour before we pulled up in front of a large stone farmhouse. Lieutenant Ocho led me inside and down a dark corridor. We stopped before a great oak door, and removing his cap, Ocho knocked.
Carlos, it is Ocho.
Enter.
The room was long and low-ceilinged. At the far end of it, a man sat working behind a battered desk. He looked up as we entered. A dark, brooding kind of man. Thin, agile, as though he could move in any direction at any moment. Yet his face was young and incredibly handsome. His eyes met mine and held there.
Please excuse me, Lieutenant Ocho. I would like to talk to Senorita Reynolds alone.
Of course, Carlos.
Senorita Reynolds, I am Carlos Mendoza.
Yes, I know.
I invite you to stay here with us, with the resistance, to observe a part of Escobar you have not yet seen.
Lieutenant Ocho said it was urgent. He said it meant my life.
We have reason to believe Pioto will kill you rather than let you write the truth about our country.
I see.
Trust us, senorita. We are your friends. Stay with us and let us show you the real Escobar. Your visit will be a rewarding one.
Thank you, Senor. I'd hope for an opportunity to visit your camp.
Good. Lieutenant Ocho will show you where you are to sleep. Good night, Senorita Reynolds.
That night, I thought of the man behind the battered desk, the way our eyes had met, and of the uncertainty in his voice as we talked, of the terrible feeling of unsureness I'd felt. Finally, I fell asleep. The next day, Lieutenant Ocho showed me the resistance camp. It wasn't a prosperous army. There were lean faces and shabby tunics, but there was determination, too. The kind I'd seen on other faces in other countries. It was almost dark when our tour ended. After we'd eaten, Ocho took me once again to the headquarters of their leader.
Please sit down, Senorita.
I want to thank you for the tour, Senor Mendoza.
Were you impressed with what you saw?
Impressed? I've seldom been impressed by war.
But you see, this is an army that can fight.
Yes, I'm sure it can.
Lieutenant Ocho tells me you were very interested. Perhaps you will write of the things you have seen here today?
I assure you I will, Senor. But I don't propose to pass judgment, merely to report the conditions of your country.
I thought the writer would have the courage to write what he knows.
You spoke of truth last night. I'm looking for it.
Last night, when you were brought here, Senorita, I had the feeling that I should not let you stay.
But you did. Why?
I do not know.
Well, if you're still unsure, why did you send for me tonight?
To find out if you are with us? No, that is not true. I saw you today, twice. Both times you were looking at me.
I wasn't aware of it.
I was, Senorita. Very much aware of it.
I think I'd better leave.
Do I frighten you so much?
No. That is, I think I'd better return to Puyoto.
You seem confused, Senorita. Whereas, I am not confused at all.
Carlos, I must go
that
back.
That is not what you really want to do, Senorita. I thought not.
Really, Carlos. Later that night, we sat beside the campfire with some of the men. Carlos was pensive, almost sullen, as he stared into the fire. Gradually, the others drifted away until there was only the two of us, alone in the world, it seemed.
Your mind is far away.
Not really.
Is there more in the world than this farm and these people?
Other farms and other people, I suppose. Not a great deal different from us.
Except that they have freedom.
Some of them do.
Those who fight for it.
Some vote for it.
Vote. And be killed if the ballot is not marked as directed.
Is that what Juan Peyoto does?
Of course. How else does he stay in power?
Well, many of your people like him.
He is corrupt.
Perhaps. But corruption and murder are different crimes.
Lovely one. So naive, so trusting.
I am trusting, Carlos. I suppose I'll always be.
I thought writers were hard people, accustomed to seeing misery, poverty, death.
Carlos, could there be a peaceful way? A settlement without bloodshed?
Now the naivete is becoming stupidity.
Couldn't you go to Peyoto, a delegation, make your demands for reforms, air your grievances?
And be executed. My lovely one, you are more childlike than I could imagine. Come here to me.
I don't think it's childlike to avoid war, killing, revolution.
The naivete is no longer amusing, Senorita. Like all Americans, you can see things only one way, your way. You talk lofty sentiment to foreigners and are cutthroats in your own homes.
That kind of statement sounds familiar. Too familiar. I'll say goodnight, Carlos.
You can't stand criticism, lovely one, eh? Your country is perfect. Everyone must bow to the great United States. In Escobar, we fight for justice.
Good night, Carlos. I spent a sleepless night thinking of the things Carlos Mendoza had said to me. And with the dawn came the realization that things are seldom so clear as they appear on the surface. That within this country there were many forces struggling for control, and each was willing to seize power at any cost. The next morning I asked Lieutenant Ocho about this.
There is great poverty, Senorita. Many have died this past winter.
And Peyoto killed them, is that it?
They died of starvation. Is it not the same thing?
No, I don't think it is. To you and to the others, Peyoto has become the symbol of everything that's wrong in your country.
But you approve his methods?
No, no. Listen to me, Ocho. Peyoto has great power, and sometimes he becomes drunk with it.
See, that I know.
But he's also frightened of it. He's afraid of you and your movement. He senses the danger of revolution. Yet he feels that his country deserves something better.
He fears a dictatorship of the people?
Yes.
Well, all the more reason to destroy him.
To end his power, yes. To destroy him, no.
Senorita, may I say something that is on my mind?
Yes, Sergio.
Is this passion of yours to avoid war, is this a passion of the mind or of the heart?
I suppose it's both.
Then I speak to you as a friend. Let it be only passion of the mind. To Carlos Mendoza, there can be only one true love, his cause.
Thank you, Ocho. Two days passed. I saw Carlos many times, but never alone. He spent his time with Ocho and the others making plans. Each day, men came to the camp and were armed with guns or knives or even clubs and given food. Each day, the men in the camp gained confidence from their growing numbers. And finally, early one evening, Carlos sent for me.
Senorita Reynolds?
Senor?
The men tell me you have decided against us.
Do you believe that, Carlos?
The men say you think we should not fight.
I think you should talk with Peyoto. At least try it. I can arrange a meeting.
Please, I did not send for you to ask your advice.
Then I'm giving it anyway. Are you so blind with hate that you can't try reason?
We have discussed this before, Senorita.
You called me stupid.
For that, I am sorry.
Carlos.
The past is forgotten.
So quickly.
My country comes first.
Your country or your vengeance?
You may go now, Senorita.
What if I stay?
Then I will know you are nothing more than a spy for Peyoto. Yes, now I know why you came here so willingly. You're no reporter of facts. You want propaganda for our beloved presidente. Well, go to him, write beautiful descriptions of Escobar, and leave us to our work.
Well, well, well. My wandering American friend has returned to us.
Would it be impolite for a lady to ask for a drink?
And so sad, too. Could it be she did not like her experience with the resistance?
Can you know where I've been?
But of course, Senorita. You have been with Carlos Mendoza. Poor Senorita. Life is not as simple as it should be. The villains are not villains, and the heroes, they are not heroes. You do not know that it was I who told the resistance that I was about to kill you. So you could see these things firsthand here.
Thanks.
Now you have visited both camps. What do you think, my lovely friend?
A plague on both your houses.
Oh, so that is it. You want us both to lose.
Or win. I don't think there's much difference.
But there is, Senorita. I am a dictator. You said it yourself. They are my people.
They're a vengeful mob. A handful of impatient men.
Senorita, I came to power in the last revolution 5 years ago. I was filled with great ambition. I was going to be the Bolivar of my country, the great liberator, Juan Peyoto. I knew it would take many years, perhaps a lifetime, so I did not hurry. I underestimated the needs of my people. I am to blame for the impressions. Now, it no longer matters.
Why do you say that?
Because tonight your friends of the resistance are going to attack.
You know that?
Yes, I know that. You know, they say in war, many sparrows must fall. I am sorry, Senorita. You are too beautiful to become a fallen sparrow.
I finished my drink and went to the room Pyotr had given me. Suddenly during the night, I was awakened by the sounds of gunshots, then the clear rattle of machine guns, and men shouting from all directions. I rushed for the door. It was locked. And for the first time, I noticed the barred windows. I was Pyotr's prisoner. This was to be his fight, alone. The next morning, one of Pyotr's servants unlocked my door. Silently, he led me toward the main offices. There were men in the corridors, moving quickly. More men than I'd ever seen in the palace before. The servant opened a door and let me inside. Juan Pyotr lay on a satin-covered bed. Beside him stood a priest.
I wanted to say goodbye to you, Senorita.
Goodbye?
This man in the black robes tells me I am going someplace. He does not say where. Senorita.
Yes.
I am sorry you missed it. Carlos was there. He was magnificent. You would have been proud.
Did Carlos...
No. It was the fool with the machine gun. You were right. No one will win.
In nomine Patris et Filius et Spiritus Sanctus. Amen.
Outside, the grounds were littered with the debris of war. Some of the women were caring for the wounded. I searched among them, the living, the dead. But he wasn't there. I asked, and they told me that when it was over, he'd been seen driving away in the army jeep with a man called Ocho. I can't say how long I sat on the marble steps and looked toward the mountains. Yet I knew I'd never see him again.
Romance is produced and directed by William Frug, with editorial supervision by Het Mannheim. You have heard Dateline Escobar, specially written for Romance by Weldon Fain, featuring Jean Bates as Shelley Reynolds, Jay Novello as Juan Pyotr, and Harry Bartell as Carlos.
Romance on Tuned to Yesterday with Dateline Escobar from August 13th, 1955 on CBS. It's an hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levenier. And now we move on to the Academy Award Theater, which was one of several radio programs to adapt this next motion picture, Hold Back the Dawn, which was originally directed by Mitchell Lyson in 1941 and was nominated for 6 Oscars and another special award. Charles Boyer and Olivia de Havilland were the principal players of the film. In this next episode, we hear Olivia de Havilland and Jean-Pierre Aumont from July 31st, 1946 on CBS.
Presents Academy Award. Every week, Squibb brings you Hollywood's finest. The great picture plays, the great actors and actresses, techniques and skills chosen from the honor roll of those who have won or been nominated for the famous Golden Oscar of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Science. our stars tonight, Olivia de Havilland and Jean-Pierre Aumont. You will hear Miss de Havilland and Mr. Aumont in Hold Back the Dawn, the screenplay which, as best motion picture production of 1941, was nominated for 7 different Academy Awards. Miss de Havilland will play the role she created on the screen for Hold Back the Dawn, and in which she was nominated as Best Actress of the Year for the 1941 Academy Award.
My maiden name was Emmy Brown. My husband's name is George Iscovescu. He was born in Romania, but he spent most of his life in Paris, on the Riviera, in Saint Moritz, at the Lido, following the seasons and the rich people. He was a dancer. Then the war came. People who had money went to America. You need a visa to go to America. So George went to Mexico, to a dusty little town that straddled the border to California. There's a wire fence. You can see right through it into the United States. George didn't think he'd have to wait very long.
I see by your questionnaire that you wish to enter the United States permanently.
Yes, sir.
Now, you were born in Bucharest, so you come under the Romanian quota. Unfortunately, that quota is very small and very crowded.
That means I will have to wait?
Between 5 and 8 years, Mr. Iscovescu.
5 and 8 years? 5 to 8 years? Like a prison sentence. 8 times 365 days. With these flies and this heat. I walked in a nightmare through the dirty town to a hotel. I was used to the Ritz and the Savoy. The local hotel is called the Esperanza. I took a room at the rate of $1 a day. I didn't expect to stay. It was the 4th of July. I couldn't stand the room or the noise any longer. So I went out and walked the streets.
It was then that I saw him for the first time. I was driving a school bus full of children. We were on a picnic. One of the kids threw firecrackers under his feet. He was in no mood for that sort of thing that day. The boy must apologize. It's a matter of discipline. Come here, Tony.
Your form of humor I do not appreciate.
Oh, you know what American boys are like. All year long, they store up mischief for the 4th of July.
It would be preferable if they let off their high spirits in America, under the feet of Americans.
Now, don't let's get into international complications.
There's a fence back there. You Americans make a very definite point of it.
I gather you don't like us very much.
Very little.
Tony, don't you dare apologize now. Just then, I put the bus in gear and rammed the car in front. I was shaking with rage. He walked away and went into the Climax bar.
When my eyes became adjusted to the dark, I saw a dancer I knew in Europe. Her name was Tamara.
George!
Tamara, what are you doing here? I took the keys to the ignition and dropped them into a sewer. I stood around a few minutes until she noticed me and her face got red.
I know you don't like us, but I promise we'll get back over that border as soon as we can.
Now, please. I was partly responsible for your accident. I feel very bad about it.
You should.
Any of these your children?
No, I'm a school teacher. They'll be in a perfect tizzy about us back home.
Of course, the parents. And maybe your husband.
I haven't any husband. But if we're not back by 9 o'clock, Mr. McAdams, the principal will think we're dead in a ditch.
While you are waiting for the car, why not telephone and tell him you are all right?
But he said there was no telephone around.
There's one at the hotel. I'd show you.
Oh, thank you.
I knew I was on the way now. They wouldn't be able to make her a new set of keys. They'd have to go for them across the border. That would take until the next day. I played it very careful. And I was very patient.
The number is Azusa, California, 30991. I hope they get the call right away. If you could only see Mr. McAdams, the principal. He always bites his fingernails. He must have gnawed them right down to the knuckles by now.
Have a cigarette?
Oh, no. Thank you, Mr.
Iscovescu.
My name is Brown, Emmy Brown.
Your name is not Margot?
It's Emmy.
She had the same hair. Only it was always mussed by the wind that winter in Chamonix.
What are you talking about?
You thought I was bitter, Miss Brown, when you spoke to me first on the street. It was because I saw another woman in your face. Margot. No, those aren't her eyes. Her eyes were bad. Eyes that seemed to be saying beautiful things, and every word they spoke, a lie. I knew it, and I loved her. The ground opened under my feet, and I loved her. I ran away. I had to come here to the end of the earth to know that I really hated her, that I had always hated her.
I'm sorry.
Just look at me, Miss Brown. Keep looking at me. It's like a sudden breeze on a stifling day.
You are the strangest man.
Perhaps the loneliest man. Naturally, they couldn't find the keys to the bus. So I arranged with the hotel to bed down the lot of them in the lobby.
Well, good night. We're settled. Good night.
Somehow, these shabby walls will not seem so empty and sad. You will be here. Close. Very near to me. Under the same roof. Breathing in the same night.
Yes. Good night.
Good night. I went up to my room. There was Tamara waiting for me.
Hello, George.
What do you want?
I've kept thinking about you all day. The way you always held me away from you when you danced. Those gigolo eyes of yours. And you selfish tramp. Did you ever love anybody in your life?
I don't want you here. Understand?
George.
You are wasting my time.
I have a little money, George. It's yours if you want it. I'll get more money. I'll give you anything. Anything you want.
Anything, Tamara?
Anything.
I'll take this.
My wedding ring.
I had a hard time going to sleep that night. My heart was beating fast. And my senses were all thrown out of gear. I found a kind of half-sleep at last. And then about 5 o'clock in the morning, I woke. He was sitting there, staring at me.
Hello.
What are you doing here? Please, you have no right to be here.
Of course I have no right. No right to be here. No right to sit watching your face, learning it like a poem. No right to listen for the stir of your heart. No right to tell you that I love you very much.
You must go away right now, please.
You needn't be afraid, Miss Brown, not a bit. We are like two trains halted for a moment at the same station, but going in different directions. We can't change our course any more than we can hold back the dawn. Soon it will be light, and you will be gone forever.
It is getting light, isn't it?
You needn't be afraid, Miss Brown. Not of a dead man. I'm dead, you see. I've asked myself thousands of times why they shouldn't bury me. Why I should go on walking and breathing and talking when I was dead. Perhaps I know now. Perhaps it was to see the sun rise once more. To hear enchantment in a woman's voice. To feel her nearness. The warmth of her lips.
No.
No rebellions, nor violent desires. If you found one in your sober little mind, you would tell it to go stand in the corner, wouldn't you, Miss Brown?
I don't know.
Not for you, the sudden flash which lights up your whole life. One split second to snatch at happiness before it's dark again. It isn't this kiss I want. It's all your kisses. It's your life. Look at your hand, Miss Brown, your left hand.
Oh.
Yes, it's your wedding ring, Miss Brown. I put it on your hand as you slept. It was my mother's. You see how wild a dream can be. But you are wise and sane and cool. You needn't be afraid.
Wait. Oh, wait. Please wait. About your being lonesome. Other people are lonesome. So lonesome they almost give up waiting. Mr. McAdams always said I was crazy, but I knew all the time, deep down in my heart, that someday, somebody, somehow, even though Azusa was at the end of the world...
had to get the Mexican judge out of bed. The license was $5. It was a good investment. The office was drab and sordid, but to Emmy Brown, being there was like standing at an altar in a cathedral with great bells ringing. When we came out into the sunlight, she took my hand.
George.
Yes?
Take the ring. Put it on my finger again. Those words.
Words?
For richer, for poorer, for better, for worse. With this ring, I'll be wed.
For richer, for poorer, for better, for worse. With this ring, I'll be wed.
Till death do us part.
Till death do us part.
I'll never take it off. Never.
What did I care what she did with the ring? I was married to an American. I was ready to cross the border. It was slow going getting the papers in order. Emmy Brown came back from her home, and we took the bus and went for a long drive back into the hinterland of Mexico. I had reasons for getting away from the border. There was a smart immigration inspector named Hammock snooping around. He was interested in people who suddenly got married to Americans, especially aliens who wanted to get over that border. Something happened on that mad drive, though. I guess I fell in love with Emmy Brown a little. She was in our room at the hotel, packing, to go back to her job in Azusa for a while. I was downstairs, and I ran into Tamara.
I thought you'd never come. I've been dying here day after day, looking down the street, waiting for you.
Bad news?
Good news. You'll be getting out of here in 3 weeks. New York by the 1st of August.
I'm not going right on to New York.
No? Oh, sure. You've got to stop over in Azusa. That would take half an hour, you said. You were going to tell her she was too good and you were too low.
I'll do it my own way, do you mind?
You like the girl?
Yes. I like her enough not to give her a sudden kick in the face in front of a whole little town. I like her enough to do it all with a little style. All right, I like her enough not to behave like a swine for once in my life.
Well, hallelujah.
That'll do. You've got enough money to get back to New York. I'll find you there when I'm ready.
Thank you. Just stand in the middle of Times Square and whistle. Mrs. Escovesco?
Yes?
You mind?
No. Come right in.
Funny, I didn't picture you looking like that. You know what one hears about a teacher. I'm Tamara. I don't think he's told you about me, or did he?
No, he didn't.
I see you're packing. Well, before you go, there's something of mine I want you to give me back.
Of yours?
My wedding ring.
This? Oh, it belonged to his mother.
Oh, isn't he wonderful? The way he knows how to pluck at the heartstrings. You see, I gave him the whole idea.
What?
Marrying you to get across the border. Take a look at the engraving in that ring. I used it to marry my little American. It says, to Toots for keeps. Flip it off. No. Maybe you should know a little more about the history of George Escovescu. Get out. Please. Please.
Howdy, Mr. Escovescu, isn't it?
Yes.
My name is Hammack, Immigration Department. I'd like to talk a few things over with your wife.
She's upstairs. If there are any questions, I'll answer them.
I'll answer your questions, Mr. Hammack.
Any.
Right over here, Mrs. Escovescu. Take a chair, will you? Had you any idea this man might have married you to get in the country?
Yes. But I asked him to marry me.
All right, he got you to ask him. Look here, you can make things very simple for the department. Anybody can see this set up with half an eye. He gets in the country, divorces you, takes up with his girlfriend, and goes about his own business. With this evidence, you can get an annulment. And that'll slam the door right in his face.
Get a what?
An annulment.
An annulment? How do you like that, George? That's America. You pay your taxes, but you get a lot of protection. No, thank you, Mr. Hammack. It's very sweet of you, but you see, there's nothing wrong. He told me everything. There weren't any false pretenses. It's a fine marriage. We love each other very much. I'm sorry for your sake you haven't got a case.
Well, maybe I'm just dumb. So long.
Amy, who told you? Tamara? I've always been full of words, you know. Big ones, smooth ones, fancy ones. Just one more word. Thanks.
No. You see, I come from a small town. We don't have those fine hotels. We eat in the drugstore. But we leave a tip just the same. I don't feel I was too generous for those 7 days of our honeymoon. Only perhaps when I met you, I shouldn't have been so vain. I should have worn my glasses. I should have looked at your face more closely. Goodbye.
Do you believe in premonitions? When a black wave breaks over you, and you suddenly know something terrible is going to happen. In my ears was the screeching of brakes, of tires taking a wild curve. Before my eyes were the foot of the gas pedal pressing it down.
George, they've been phoning you.
Tamara, there was an accident, wasn't there?
Yes.
Bad?
Yes.
Where is she?
The receiving hospital, Los Angeles.
I'll take your car.
They won't let you cross the border. You have no papers.
The key, Tamara.
They'll catch you. You haven't got a chance. All you're waiting for nothing. If you do this, you'll never be admitted. George!
Look at this guy coming. He's nuts. Hey, stop, you. Stop! Don't you see that sight? I said stop!
That's Escovesco. He's my meat. Get my car and a patrol motorcycle escort. This is where I fix that gigolo's wagon.
It was 5 o'clock in the morning when I got to the hospital. It wasn't until I had climbed those steps that I was really afraid. Afraid it was too late. But there was nothing left I could do.
She's unconscious. We're very much afraid. The steering wheel was crushed against her. There's no fight left in her.
Can I go in?
Of course.
Amy. Amy.
She doesn't hear.
Amy. It's George. I've gone. I'm here, Amy.
She seemed to hear you. Go on. Keep talking.
Breathe, Amy. Try hard. That's it. Again. Now again. all right. Remember the rain beating on the windshield that day we drove, and the wiper going, and the word it spoke? Together. 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 Breathe, Emmy. We are together. 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 I don't know how many hours I sat there or days, but I must have said, breathe a million times. Breathe. 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 Darling, breathe. Somehow she pulled through. Once she even smiled. And when Hammer caught up with me finally, she was out of danger. I asked him to go ahead and get her an annulment of the marriage. Said he would. Told me he could send me to the pen for 10 years for crossing the border. I didn't care. And for some reason, he just took me back over the border. Back to the grave. I started 4 months of a living death. One day, I saw him coming through the big gate.
Oh, here you are, Escovescu. I've been looking for you.
Why don't you leave me alone?
Don't you feel like stepping up to the gate and looking at the new citizens crossing the border today?
Very funny, Mr. Hammock. Like inviting a hungry child to stand in front of a bakery window.
I talked to the baker. He gave me something for you, not that you deserve a pie. I always thought you were a pretty poor excuse for a human, but, well, I was raised a good Christian, and my folks always used to say that a guy can straighten out once he sees the light. That is, if he's got guts. You have. In America, we can use people with guts. Here are your papers, approved by Washington. Preference quota for husband of American wife.
Mr. Hammock, I'm...
Get going, get going. There's somebody waiting for you, swinging on that gate.
Gate. Gate. Somebody waiting. Waiting across the border.
Emmy! Emmy! Emmy!
He was running, eager, hatless, and like a boy in tears. Something inside of me began to yearn as I watched him coming. My hand came up as if it could fight back my tears, and suddenly it glistened in the sun, and I laughed through my tears. It was my golden wedding ring. I had never taken it off.
Tomorrow on Air Force Day, E.R. Squibb and Sons, with all the American people, we'll honor the men who won fame and overwhelming victory in the air for the cause of free men everywhere. General Carl Spotts, commanding general, Army Air Forces, writes to old and new Air Force personnel everywhere, "I urge you to take practical steps to preserve and foster the spirit of your Air Force, that you enroll under the leadership of Jimmy Doolittle in the Air Force Association, your association for perpetuating the glorious traditions of the United States Army Air Forces." And General Jimmy Doolittle, president of the Air Force Association, states, "We who are no longer in uniform are joining the Air Force Association to continue the Air Force spirit of fellowship, to remain abreast of air development, and to honor the memory of our comrades who gave their lives in war. We want all new and old Air Force men and women, whether officers or enlisted personnel, to wear our pin, receive our magazine every month, and take part in the activities of local wings and squadrons now being organized throughout the country. Send tonight for an application form to the Air Force Association, Washington, D.C. Membership includes subscription for 1 year to the Air Force magazine. In this way, help continue United States air supremacy."
Now,
Next Wednesday, another great picture. The House of Squibb will present Academy Award starring Paul Lucas in Watch on the Rhine. Today's performance of Hold Back the Dawn was written for radio by Frank Wilson, with an original musical score composed and conducted by Leet Stevens. Our producer-director is Dee Engelbach. Olivia de Havilland can currently be seen in the Paramount production To Each His Own. Jean-Pierre Aumont appeared through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of the Technicolor musical Holiday in Mexico. This is Hugh Brundage bidding you good night until next Wednesday at the same time, when you're invited to listen again to Academy Award, presented by the House of Squibb, a name you can trust. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Academy Award Theater, adapting the motion picture Hold Back the Dawn, originally seen in 1941. And in terms of movie history, was a big turning point for screenwriters and directors Charles Brackett and Billy Wilder. At one point in the original draft of Hold Back the Dawn, leading man Charles Boyer was supposed to have a brief conversation with a cockroach, which he reportedly found to be idiotic and complained to the director, who removed the scene. Charles Bracken and Billy Wilder, who had teamed up for the screenplay of the film, were so incensed with the director's decision that they decided after that film they would work independent of other directors, most notably with the Oscar-winning motion picture The Lost Weekend with Ray Milland and Jane Wyman in 1945, where they both received Oscars for Best Director, Best Screenplay, and also Best Picture. And I hope you saw some great pictures in your theater of the mind. In this hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday, be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.